Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, chapter entitled Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, text number 20. Yo vijayanu pahato pi dasharda vritya. Nidram uvaha jatari krita loka yatra. Antarjalehi kashipu sparshanu kulam. Bimomi malini janashasukam vivrinvan. Yo vijayanu pahato pita sharda britcha. Nidram uvaha jatari krita loka yatra. Anta jalehi kashipu spashanukulam. Bimomi malini janasya sukham vivrinvan. Yo vijayanu pahato pita sharda vritya. Nidram uvaha jatari krita loka yatra. Antarjalehi kashipu spashanukulam. Bimormi malini janasya sukham vivrinvam. Yaha. One. Avijaya. Influenced by nescience. Anupahata, without being affected. Api, in spite of. Dasha-arta, five. Vritya, interaction. Nidram, sleep. Uvarha, accepted. Jatari, within the abdomen. Krita, doing so. Lokayatra, maintenance of the different entities. Antajale, within the water of devastation. Ahi Kashipu, on the snake bed. Spasha Anukulam, happy for the touch. Bhima Urmi, violent waves. Malini, chain of. Janasya, of the intelligent person. Sukham, happiness. Vivrinvan, showing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shloka. My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves, and you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes, showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons. At that time, all the universal planets are stationed within your abdomen. Translation responsibly. My Lord, you accept the pleasure of sleeping in the water of devastation, where there are violent waves, and you enjoy pleasure on the bed of snakes, showing the happiness of your sleep to intelligent persons. At that time, all the universal planets testation with your abdomen. Purport. Persons who cannot think of anything beyond the limit of their own power are like frogs in a well, who cannot imagine the length and breadth of the great Pacific Ocean. Such people take it as legendary when they hear that the Supreme Lord is lying on his bed within the great ocean of the universe. They are surprised that one can lie down within water and sleep very happily. But a little intelligence can mitigate this foolish astonishment. There are many living entities within the bed of the ocean who are also enjoying the material bodily activities of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. If such insignificant living entities can enjoy life within the water, why can't the Supreme Lord, who is all-powerful, sleep on the cool body of a serpent and enjoy in the turmoil of violent ocean waves? The distinction of the Lord is that his activities are all transcendental, and he is able to do anything and everything without being deterred by limitations of time and space. He can enjoy his transcendental happiness regardless of material considerations. Omigyan timidan disya chananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadantikam Pancha kalpata rubyascha kripa sindhu pi evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishna vebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So, this is the first, well, not the first, but the first lengthy description of the creation in the Bhagavatam. Second canto is mentioned creation, but there's not a elaboration. But now we're hearing the first of the long descriptions of the creation, very intrinsic. Then there's two more in this canto. So three times this creation is discussed again and again and again. And each time different points are brought out. It's more or less the same. The third one's very interesting, actually. Third one's within the teachings of Kapila. And it's a very detailed analysis. So it's very interesting. So what is the purpose of studying this creation? Why should we study the creation? Jiva Goswami mentions why. Why is it we should study? Why is it here in the Bhagavatam? Why is it given to you three times? Why is it important? Why is it necessary? Why not just go to the 10th canto? Prabhupada gave us Krishna book in 1970 before he translated all of this. So why don't we just read Krishna book? Why do we have to hear about creation when our goal is Krishna? Param Satyam Dhimihi. Krishna is the Param Satyam. He is the goal. So why do we have to read creation? Why do we have to read it three times? Why do we have to read it in so much detail? Who has the answer? Does anyone have the answer? Is there an answer? Yes, Bhakti Sarprabhu. Yep, that's one. That's a good reason. Yeah. Yeah, that helps us because we understand he is supreme. So when you get to the 10th canto, you know, you should know, Prabhupada says, when you get to canto 10, you should understand Krishna, you should be God-realized. This is not an ordinary boy who's stealing butter or dancing with gopis. This is not an ordinary person. You should understand his supremacy. So yes, it does help us understand his supremacy. That universes are coming from his pores, right? And then they go back into his pores like that. I mean, that is supremacy. Shiva cannot do that, or does not do that. Universe. universes do not emanate from Lord Shiva, although he is almost as powerful as Vishnu himself, but universes don't come from the pores. I mean, this is power. You know, what comes out of your pores when you are sleeping? Not much. But universes are emanating and coming back in like that. Okay, so that's one reason. But then there's one reason which is, you could say, maybe even more intrinsic, or Jiva Goswami discusses. In other words, to analyze the creation. Now, this is the process Prabhupada describes as neti neti. Not this, not this. This is called Sankhya philosophy. So this is why creation has gone into in so much detail. So you will understand the difference between matter and spirit. Because at the moment, you think you are matter. That is our defect. That is called ahankar. Ahankar means false conception of who I am. I don't understand who I actually am. So you need to understand the creation. But you have to study it deeply. And you have to meditate on it. There are 26 elements which are discussed within the Bhagavatam. Right? The Mahabhutas. Right? And then the sense objects. And then the 5 knowledge acquiring senses. And then the 5 working senses. So that's 20. And then you have mind, intelligence, ego. Then you have 23, right? And then you have the sum total, which is like the Mahatattva, or put it all together. That's another element that's considered. And then you have Jiva, is 25. And then finally you have Supersoul. Supersoul is 26. So basically that's the creation. So by the process of Sankhya, Sankhya means analysis, we're meant to analyze who and what we are and who and what we are not. You have to understand what you are and what you are not. Right? That's what we need to analyze. So that is the purpose of studying the creation, Jiva Goswami says, so that we can understand the difference between ourselves, what we are and what we are not. Because at the moment we all think we are something which we are not. That is the definition of Maya. Maya means that which is not. And that's all of us are in Maya. Many times I've told the story. So Prabhupada is walking on Juhu Beach, down the beach, and Giriraj Maharaj is walking next to Prabhupada. And then as Giriraj Maharaj is walking, he's talking to Prabhupada. And at one point he said, "I'm sorry, Prabhupada, I was in Maya." And Prabhupada stopped and put his cane into the sand. He said, "You are always in Maya." And then Prabhupada kept walking, and Giriraj Maharaj was so struck. Prabhupada said, "You are always in Maya." So he offered his obeisances on the beach to Prabhupada. And then he ran. And Prabhupada just kept walking. And then he ran after Prabhupada to catch up. So Prabhupada's putting us in our place. In other words, we are always in Maya. Why? Because we identify with matter. That which is not. You think you are the material body. And if you analyze the definition of Maya, that which is not, we think, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, we think that where there is happiness, we think where there is distress, there is happiness. That is the definition of Maya. You think, I will get happiness from this place, or this thing, or this activity, but actually, that activity gives you distress. That's the definition of Maya. And what is the classic example in the material world of a place where you think you can get happiness, but there's actually distress? Maituni bhavam, pumsa striya, maituni bhavam etam, hridaya grantim ahu, hridaya grantim. Hridaya means tight knot, hridaya in the heart. Granti means knot, powerful knot in the heart. Hridaya grantim. Pumsa striya, pumsa means men, striya means feminine. Yeah. Maituni bhav, maituni means the sexual bhav, or the conjugal rasa, the perverted conjugal rasa in this material world. That is what causes the tight knot. By definition, everyone in the material world thinks that is where I will get happiness. By definition, that is where you will get suffering. Therefore, it is called Maya. Maya means illusion. Right? You think it's one thing, but actually it's another thing. That's the definition of Maya. You think it's that, but it's actually that. You think, oh, that's happiness, but actually that's distress. you are not convinced, then just get married. That is why we have Grihastha Ashram, to make you detach from the material energy. Like I got married recently, again, because I could not escape from material energy. So I had to get married again. But Krishna has given me a Vaishnavi, a good devotee wife, like that. But even still, the taste for happiness, it's not found in the material world. It doesn't matter who you marry, what you marry, where you marry, which planet you marry on. Right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You never get the full satisfaction of the soul. Yatma supersedeti, Bhagavatam says. The Atma will never be satisfied by any material arrangement, no matter how perfect the person is, or how perfect the person is not. You'll need full satisfaction, because by definition, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, you cannot get pleasure from the material energy, because we are spiritual. And you cannot get pleasure, lasting pleasure, or full satisfaction from the material, because we are anti-material, we are spiritual. So how can you get pleasure from the material energy? It can't give you pleasure. It can give you some fleeting moment of happiness, but not deep satisfaction of the soul. So therefore, the only way you can be happy is by cutting that knot in the heart. Hridaya karantim. So what is the sword? Krishna speaks about this in Gita. The sword of knowledge and detachment. A sword has two sides, right? Not always. There's some swords only have one side, but generally a sword will have, you can cut it both ways. Like that. So one side of the sword is knowledge, and the other side is detachment. Gyan vairagya. And this will cut the not within the heart. You have to develop your gyan. How do you develop your gyan? Yeah, come to a Bhagavatam class. That's the system. Why did Prabhupada set up the Bhagavatam class in the morning? So you can get transcendental knowledge. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanam, Nivedanam. So there are seven processes which Prahlad Maharaj gives in the which canto of the Bhagavatam? Seventh canto, yeah. Famous. Our whole process of bhakti is based on those nine processes. So the first one is called Shravanam. Right? Prabhupada says, when he gives the purport for that verse, then Prabhupada says there are two types of hearing, active and passive. Right? Passive means you're reading the book. Active means you're doing what you're doing now. You're listening to the class. Right? So you need both. Prabhupada said, every day, 1 to 2 hours, we should be reading his books. Hands up if you're reading Prabhupada's books 1 hour every day. 1, 2, 3, 3.5. 3.25. Okay, 4. Okay, I've got 5.5. So, 6 if you add everyone together. Like that. So Prabhupada said every day, 1 hour. Or 2 hours. So then, devotees sometimes say to Prabhupada, how do I do that, Prabhupada? So busy. Prabhupada said, eat less. Sleep less. Prabhupada says like that. Eat less. Sleep. What was Prabhupada doing? Right? Prabhupada slept 2 hours a night. Right? And then during the day, half an hour. And then after lunch, half an hour. That's 3 hours. And then he'd have the massage. The massage went for about an hour. So that's, you know, 3 to 4 hours of rest a day. Bus. So then Prabhupada would say, so why are you not doing? You know that story? I've told the story before. So Prabhupada's translating in Vrindavan. You know, Prabhupada's up at 12, gets up at 12, 12.30, right, starts translating. Everyone else is asleep. So Prabhupada rings the bell. It's like 2 in the morning or something, rings the bell. So Satsarup Maharaj is outside. You know, he sleeps outside Prabhupada's room. So he gets up, you know, hears the bell, wakes up, runs in. Yeah, and Prabhupada said, what's his name? He says, go and get Guru Kripa Swami. Right? So Satsarup Maharaj like goes off into the dark, you know, finds the rooms, knocks on the door. Guru Kripa Swami wakes up, comes down. Prabhupada wants to see you now. So, okay. So, you know, cleans himself, comes in, offers obeisances, like, you know, 2 in the morning, you know, offers obeisances, sits there, and Prabhupada's just translating. He's sitting on the other side of the desk. So Prabhupada just keeps translating. And after a few minutes, Guru Kripa Maharaj says, he says, Prabhupada, you called me? And Prabhupada says, "What were you doing?" And he's like, "I said, I was sleeping, Prabhupada." "Why are you sleeping?" He said, "Prabhupada, I sleep 5 or 6 hours a day so I can refresh my body to serve you. Why are you sleeping 5 or 6 hours? Why are you not sleep like me, 2 hours?" He said, he was just like, "Prabhupada, you are Paramahamsa. Why you are not Paramahamsa?" "Prabhupada, why you are not Paramahamsa?" And Guru Kriya Maharaj is just looking at Prabhupada, didn't know what to say. Prabhupada said, "Go and take rest." So that's the point. Prabhupada's me. Prabhupada did not expect all of us to do that, because none of us can do it. No, not possible. 3 or 4 hours a day, not possible. Very, very rare. Some devotees, but very rare. You know, 6 hours, 7 hours, that's okay. But Prabhupada's saying, eat less, sleep less. If you do that, you'll have time for reading. You can read 1 or 2 hours a day. You can do it. But you have to eat less, sleep less. But you're too attached to your material body. Therefore, time is wasted. We waste so much time. Therefore, we are not taking advantage. So passive hearing is there, and active hearing is there. Active hearing means you must come to the Bhagavatam class. That is active hearing. You need to hear, Prabhupada says, it is more important to hear than to read. More important. Not that you shouldn't read, because he already said 1 or 2 hours reading. But then he said, more important is to hear. Why? Because then you're getting the realizations of the devotees on top of it. Why is the Bhagavatam considered sweeter? Because it manifested through the lips of Shukadev, the parrot. So his realizations made the Purana sweeter. And then when we get it through a devotee and then another devotee and another devotee, then it becomes sweeter. That is the system. That is how you purify your consciousness. So you must hear the Bhagavatam. One time Prabhupada was giving Bhagavatam class in Juhu, Mumbai, and devotees were not in the class. So then Prabhupada asked the class, he said, "Where were the devotees?" Right? And they said, "They were cleaning your room, Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, "We can pay people to clean the room." He said, "But we cannot pay people to sit in the Bhagavatam class." So you must develop Vasudev Kata, Ruchi. Ruchi means taste for hearing the Bhagavatam. So you have to come regularly. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya means regularly you have to come to the classes and you have to hear the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Right? And that purifies the consciousness. That is called Divya Gyan. And we need the Gyan and the Vairagya to cut the knot in the heart of the attachment between the men and the women. Because basically, that's what everyone in this world is caught up on. Basically. Some people other things, but basically in the higher living entities, they go into Gyan, they're caught by Jnana. But most of us is caught by Maituni Bhav, attraction between the sexes. So that needs to be cut by developing Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge. Right? And Vairagya. Vairagya comes from Jnana. When you develop knowledge, you develop detachment. Automatically you'll become detached. So you have to develop knowledge and detachment. Right, that is part of the process of bhakti. Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya says this when he glorifies Lord Chaitanya. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yogena. You brought the bhakti yoga, or the process of devotion, which is enriched by jnana and vairagya. Detachment from the material energy. Which ashram you're in is not significant in the Kali Yuga. Whether you are Grihastha or Brahmachari or Sannyasi or Vanavasa, that is not significant in Kali Yuga. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur has already said that to be Grihastha in Kali Yuga is a good position. And most people will be that anyway. Right? So there's no problem. Which ashram you're in, that is not the issue. What is the issue is how deeply you're diving into the process of bhakti or Krishna consciousness. That is the point. And are you becoming detached from the material energy? You can be Grihastha, you can be completely detached. Famous example in Mahaprabhu's pastimes was Pundarik Vijayanidhi. You know Pundarik Vijayanidhi? Right? Very opulent. He was like a king, practically. Very opulent. And he had like this traveling grihastha. Like if we go traveling somewhere, we just travel and, you know, we take one bag. But he used to take tents, mandals, right? and couches. It was like a whole thing whenever he went somewhere. He was like a king. He was told, who was it who was took shelter? That was Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit, whose appearance day was on Sunday. Right? Gadadhar is the incarnation of Srimati Radharani. Right? So Gadadhar was told was it Mukunda? You come and see this elevated Vaishnava, Pundarik Vijayaniti. So Gadadhar was very renounced. Yeah? So he walked into the big tent where he's and he was sitting there. He was in the tent and he was sitting on this big couch, with big silk cushions, right? And there was carpets on the ground, and a very opulent situation. And he even had a mirror hanging next to him, right here, so he could look. And he was chewing pan. Pan means, in India, everyone chews this reddish stuff. Right? Krishna chews it in the spiritual world. It makes you relaxed. It's an intoxicant. Lord Chaitanya said the Vaishnavas are not allowed to take the pan. We're not allowed to chew it because it's an intoxicant. It makes you relaxed. It's like, you chew it and you become happy. So, it's a mild stimulant. Right? It's a drug. There's another drug that we take every day. What is that called? Yeah, but there's one ingredient in the prasad. It's actually a drug. It's called sugar. It's a drug, Prabhupada says. It's a drug. You take it, and then you just become relaxed. Right? Yeah, it's okay. No problem. As long as I have some gulabs, yeah, it's okay. I don't care what's going on in the rest of the world. But so it's a drug. So you have to be careful of sugar, actually. Too much of it, it can become addictive like that. It's good, though. Sugar is good. There's a whole philosophy now that you should not take sugar. Sugar is okay, but just moderately. So he's chewing pan, right? Devotees aren't allowed. So Gadadhar walks in. Gadadhar's a renunciate, right? At that time, I think he was grihastha, but he was renunciate. Walks in, offers obeisances, looks up. Pundarishvajini is chewing pan, and he's got a mirror hanging next to him. And he looks at himself in the mirror, and he goes, he's looking at himself in the mirror, right? Chewing this pan. Like completely, this is a pure devotee of Krishna, right? In the spiritual world, who is Pundarik? In Krishna's pastimes. Yeah, he's Brishabhanu Maharaj, who is the father of Radharani. So Brishabhanu Maharaj comes down in Gaura Leela as Pundarik Vijayaniti and is sitting there looking at himself in the mirror, chewing, And what's he thinking when he's looking in the mirror, right? He must be thinking of Krishna. Krishna used to do this. Chew the pan. So he's completely... So Gadadhar walks in, offers obeisances, looks at him, and thinks, what sort of a person is this? Right? So Gadadhar leaves. Right? And he does that, and he goes away. And he says, I went to see this person, but he's not a pure devotee. He's a sense enjoyer. He's Vishayi. And Mukunda says, no. He said, come with me again. You don't understand him. So they walk in. He's there again. He's on the couch, enjoying himself. And then Mukunda, he chants one verse, or he may even get Gadadhar to do it. Chants one verse from the Bhagavatam. And when he hears that verse, he goes mad. And he falls off the couch and begins to roll around. He's saying, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Completely in ecstasy. So the point is, it doesn't matter which ashram you're in. The point is that you have to chew your pan and you have to... No, that's not the point. The point is you have to be fully absorbed in Krishna. That's the point. Right? Externals are not important. It is your dedication to the process of bhakti and it is your vairagya. Vairagya means your detachment from this world. And Prabhupada says this in the Krishna book, right? In the later chapters, like chapter 30, I think it is, in the Krishna book, which is the pastime of Krishna with the gopis. Prabhupada says, practically, how do we understand how much we're advancing in Krishna consciousness? Practically. Right? How do we know how advanced we have become or we are becoming? How do you know? What's one way of telling? A very definite way. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book. Right? So he says, how much you're becoming detached from the material energy. That's how we know. You have to, and only you know that. You're the only one who knows what goes on in there. Right, no one else knows all the craziness which goes on in there. Right, you have to be detached from the material energy. Right? So whether you're grihastha or sannyasi or vanaprastha or brahmachari or brahmacharini, right, how detached have you become? So we cultivate bhakti, divya gyan, spiritual knowledge, by studying the Bhagavatam, by hearing the Bhagavatam, right, by reading the Bhagavatam, by reading the other books, Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the books, and developing detachment. That should be the natural consequence of our bhakti. Right? And jnana, divya jnana, means transcendental knowledge. We understand the difference between matter and spirit. That's the difference between jnana and vijnana. Vijnana means realization. You have to realize you are not the body. Because what is the Bhagavatam? The Bhagavatam is an elaboration on the Bhagavad Gita. Right? The Bhagavad Gita is sutra. Right? In Gita Upanishad it is called. Upanishad means like they're sutras. Right? So the Bhagavad Gita is 700 terse, very concise verses. The Bhagavatam is an elaboration on that philosophy. So what is the first thing we hear in the Bhagavad Gita when Krishna begins to instruct Arjuna? First thing he says, you're not the body. Asocha nam vasochas tuam. He says to Arjuna, you're speaking learned words, but actually you're mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. First thing he says, difference between matter and spirit. And what does the Bhagavatam elaborate upon? Right? In this whole section of creation, which we're in now, in the third canto, this whole section of creation is an analysis of the difference between matter and spirit. Krishna says in, say, 20 verses, between verse 11 and 30, right, of the second chapter, he gives some jnana, and then this is all now being elaborated in the Bhagavatam, chapters and chapters and chapters, hundreds and thousands of verses. Why? To make us detach from this material energy. Because you have to become detached. Hands up if you want to go back to Godhead. Then you have to become detached. Hands up if you're detached from Maya. So on one hand you're saying you want to go back to Godhead, and the other hand you're saying I'm attached to Maya. Right? And Krishna's looking at you right now from the altar, and he's looking at all of us, and he's thinking we are quite schizophrenic. Because we all put our hands up, you know, I want to go back to Godhead, and then we're all attached to Maya. So Krishna looking at us, what's going on here? So you have to develop detachment. That's the whole process. Now, where does it come from? It comes from Param Dishtva Nivartate. This is the theme of the Bhagavad Gita. The theme of the Bhagavad Gita is that you must develop a higher taste. Now, where do you get the higher taste from? Sankirtan, yeah, that's one place. Yeah, where else? Chanting, yeah, that's one place. Where else? Yeah, sadhu sangha, where else? How? That's the result. But how do we get the higher taste? Prasadam, yeah. Prasadam. Where does prasadam come from? Prasadam comes from devotional service. No, prasadam comes from the Archa Vigraha, Srimurti Shraddhaya Sevan. Where else do we get the higher taste? What is it? Yeah, association of devotees, sadhu sangha. Right. So Rupa Goswami says there are 64 angas, right? But then at the end, he reiterates five of them again. And he says that these five are the most important. And he says even a slight attachment to any of these five can produce bhava even in a neophyte. So what are those five? What are the most five important things that we should be focusing on? Sadhu sangha, right? Nam kirtan, right? Bhagavat shravan, Srimurti Shraddhaya Sevan and Mathura Bhas. Right? These are the five things that we should be absorbing our consciousness in. Because they will give us a taste which will take us away from the material energy. Because you can't just renounce the material energy without getting something superior. That's the whole philosophy of the Gita. Krishna says, param, just, param means there must be something better. Otherwise you'll just go back to that thing again. Just like in the ninth canto we studied in the last few weeks in the Bhagavatam about the pastime of Sobari. Sobari Muni went into the Jamuna and he was performing meditation, right? For it says like 10,000 years he was meditating. But then he saw two fish copulating, right? Two fish having sex, and then he thought, I used to do that. Right? So then he broke his meditation, could not focus, climbed out of the water, went to the local king. This was in Mathura, right? He's in the Jamuna, right? He comes out, goes to the king, says, I want to marry some daughters of yours. Give me a princess, right? And the king looked at him like, you know, he's got barnacles on his body. You know, he'd been underwater for, imagine, you know, 10,000 years under the water, and then he comes out. He's got stuff growing off him and everything. He said, now give me one of your daughters. And the king was very polite like that, but he didn't give a daughter. So then he went and changed his body into a beautiful, said like a body like a demigod. And then he came back and the king said, okay, now take. The king had 50 daughters, right? Then when they saw him, they all argued. They all said, I want to marry him. And they all turned on me, all the sisters. No, I'm marrying him. Like that. So then he said, okay, I'll marry all of you. 50. And then he had 100 sons with each daughter. Hare Baba. 100 sons each daughter. It's 5,000 kids. 5,000 kids, right? And 50 wives, right? And what was that? Just so he could enjoy sex life. So Krishna said, okay, have sex life, right? Where was he? He was in the holy dharm. He was in Mathura. He was in the holy dharm. And he was meditating on sex life. So when you meditate on sex life or any material desire in the holy dharm, in this temple, while you're chanting the holy name, while you're in front of the deities, those desires will become fulfilled, most likely. So you be careful. Be careful what you're chanting. Otherwise, you might get 50 wives. You won't have 5,000 kids. Because that's not humanly possible in Kali Yuga. In the previous Yugas, they could do those things. So then, he had 5,000 like that. And what is the result? What is the result? 50 wives and 5,000 kids. What's the result of one wife? Or one husband and two kids? It's renunciation, vairagya. Right? You'll become detached. Right? If you're not detached, just stay with it. Right? And keep chanting. And Krishna will do it for you. He'll make you detached. That's the name. That's why we go through Grihastha Ashram. Because when you come out the other end, right, you just say, I'm ready now. That's the whole point. If you don't come out at the end, if you haven't come out of Grihastha Ashram, you're not detached. You know, you have to take birth again. Bahu Jamma Kandiya. You have to go back again. You should be detached. And if you're a brahmachari, you should already be detached. Otherwise, Krishna says michacha. Krishna says that's just external. You got the color, but if you haven't got the vairagya, then that's not real. Then you'll get married. That's inevitable. That. But the point is, you go through the Grihastha Ashram to develop detachment. Now, why does Sobari, why did the material desires manifest in his consciousness? This is an interesting point. If you read the pastime, yeah, due to an offense. He committed an aparad. Who did he offend? Yeah, Garuda. He offended the pure devotee. It doesn't matter if it's a pure devotee, it can be any devotee. It can be just the devotee who washes the pots down the back there. Or it can be anyone. It can be any devotee. But you offend that devotee, Krishna withdraws his mercy. So his mercy was, the mercy was withdrawn. And then he became attached to sex life. Great sage, but he could not become perfect because he offended Garuda. Garuda used to come here all the time and dive into the Jamuna. You see the birds? They come, the hawks, they come, they dive into the water and they grab the fish and they eat fish. Because Garuda, he eats fish and snakes. That's his prasad. Because he's Garuda. He's allowed to. Right? Not you. Right? You're not allowed to eat the fish or the snakes. But Garuda is allowed to because that's his body. Half man, half bird. So he comes and whoo, he was eating the fish. So the fish used to come to Sabari Muni because he's living under the water in the Jamuna. And this is like Garuda keeps coming all the time. He took my dad yesterday. Right? And he's just whoo, like that. So Garuda, Sabari cursed Garuda. He said, if you take any fish from here, you will die. So then Garuda had to go somewhere else. But Garuda was offended. He offended the carrier of Vishnu, the Lord. So because of that aparad, then Krishna withdrew the mercy. So that's why the Bhagavatam stresses again and again and again. Because now we're studying the ninth canto in our Bhaktivedanta course. So the ninth canto is once again, as the whole Bhagavatam does, it stresses 2 points again and again and again, leading us to the tenth canto. Do not offend devotees. Right? That's there all through the Bhagavatam. Ninth canto keeps reiterating, don't offend the devotees. Because if you want to wreck your devotional service, just commit offenses. Just commit offenses. You'll destroy it for certain. But if you want to go back to Krishna, you have to learn not to offend devotees. And the second lesson is you have to become detached from sex life. This is all the way through the night. It's said again and again and again. Because Solbari gets attached. And what's his name, that king? Ninth canto, the famous one. It's coming up. Yeah, Pururava. He becomes attached. It's again and again, don't become attached to sex life. Because we see even very advanced devotees, even in ISKCON, we see devotees that get very high, but then sex life throws them off again. So you have to become detached. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the safe way is the Grihastha Ashram. Right? And if you can do the Brahmachari Ashram and then go into sannyasa or the renounce, that's good. That's desirable. But make sure you're actually doing it. Otherwise, you're just causing trouble for yourself and for everyone else. So, the Bhagavatam is teaching us that we need to hear about this creative pastime again and again and again. So that's why we're going through it. So Brahma is praying to the Lord for inspiration to do this service. What is the service he's being given? What's his service? Create the universe. Populate the universe. That's a big seva. Right? We're given a little bit of service and we can't handle it. Like, oh, I'm doing so and so. Imagine you had to create the universe. Just like one of the kids said to me the other day, how come Brahma has 4 heads? That's obvious why he has 4 heads. You know, try to create the universe. You need 4 heads. Minimum. You know, you need 4 directions. North, south, east. Well, you have to know what's going on in every direction simultaneously. Right, to create the whole thing. It's a huge service. So what's he praying for here? He's praying, please, I'm about to get into the mode of which mode of nature is Brahma in control of? Rajagun, passion. Right? Vishnu is said to be Sattvagun, in control, through the demigods, not directly, but through the demigods, he maintains. Shiva is said to control Tamagun, he destroys everything at the end. And Brahma creates everything. So when you get in the mode of passion, there's a danger, and Prabhupada points this out in the purports. The danger of the mode of passion is that it overcomes your consciousness, and it makes you forget Krishna. So then, because the feeling when you're passionate, you start controlling things. Ishroham, Ahambogi, Siddham, Balaban, Suki. So you start thinking, I'm the controller, I'm the doer, I'm the enjoyer. So when you start getting into that bar, that consciousness, you forget Krishna. So he's just about to create. So he says to Krishna, I'll create, but please don't let me forget you. So we also have to pray like this when we do our service. Krishna, I'm doing my service, but don't let me forget you. Don't let me get puffed up. Because I was the best possible pot washer the temple has ever seen. Otherwise, you'll become proud. So we have to hear about this again and again and again, this creative energy. So we become detached. If you study the Bhagavatam, you don't become detached, then what's the point of your study? What is the fruit of your study? So Bhagavatam, it is Shravanam. It is hearing. Hearing is bhakti. Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. It is bhakti. This hearing, what we're doing there, it is bhakti. It is the highest form of bhakti. Jnanayat Yashu Vairagyam. Jnanam Chiyata Hoitukam. You will get Jnana and Vairagya. Vairagya Bija Nija Bhakti Yogena. This is the whole point that Lord Chaitanya has given us. Our bhakti must be stimulating Jnana and Vairagya. Devotees must be having. If you're not having, then what are you doing? What is the point? I'm studying all these books and then I'm still not detached. Then what's your point? It means you're failing the process. So take shelter of Krishna, because no one else in this world can give you protection. Doesn't matter who you marry, they can't do anything for you. Only one person can do something for you. Bhagavan Shri Krishna Chandra Ki. Everyone else will let you down. Everyone else is fallible soldiers. What is that verse? The fallible soldier verse? How's it start? Deha pacha kalatradishu atma sanyesh vasat swapi asat. Asat means fallible soldiers. Bhagavatam says, everyone else will let you down. Your kids will let you down. Guaranteed. Your kids will disappoint you. Guaranteed. Your kids will disappoint you. You see, so many devotees. I know devotees in this congregation. Some of the leaders in this congregation, right? Their kids are giving them a really hard time at the moment. The kids will come good. We're not worried about the kids. They'll come good. They're just going through their teenage years. But, right, it's causing a lot of distress at the moment for the parents. So your kids will let you down. That is guaranteed. So have as many as you can. Because guaranteed you're going to be disappointed. And then, your wife will let you down. Deha, apacha. Kalatra means the wife or the husband. The wife, they're going to let you down for sure. Right? Even if you marry a wonderful devotee, you have a wonderful, many devotees, it doesn't mean Grihastha life is just an endless tragedy. It can be very satisfying, but you're never going to be perfectly satisfied. You will be let down, guaranteed you will be let down. Your wife, your husband will let you down. Right? Your children will let you down. Apacha, adishu means everything in your house will let you down. Right? Your car will let you down. Right? Your clock will let you down. Right? Your fridge will let you down. Right? Your couch will let you down. Right? Your watch will let you down. Everything lets you down in this material world. And deha, this is where it all begins. Your body will let you down. Because we all have faith in our body. But that's going to let you down, guaranteed. When you're young, it's so strong, so powerful. But, now I'm 45, it's just like, it's like they say, what do they say? Is it saying in English? The other side of the hill or downhill? It's all downhill from here. Like, I'm on the downhill now. Like, it's all like, it's just going down. And as I'm going down the hill, it gets faster and faster and faster. It's like you're on a go-kart when you're a kid. You're just going down. There's no brakes. It's just getting faster. So that's what old age is. It just goes downhill very rapidly. Your body will let you down. You're strong now. You go to the gym and you're strong and you walk around and it's like, I'm pumping that. But it will let you down, guaranteed. So your body lets you down. Your kids let you down. Right? So only one person will not let you down. Sri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan, Ki. He won't let you down. We have to have that faith in Krishna. Because in the material world, right, we'll be tested. Krishna will test us. And we will even question whether or not Krishna is letting us down. That will happen also. That will be one of the tests that you'll go through in your bhakti. Is Krishna actually there for me? Very advanced devotees in our movement. Some of them got cancer. Right? I know one devotee, very advanced, very powerful preacher in our movement. He got cancer and he thought... This is what he revealed later on after he went through everything. He thought Krishna had left him. Krishna, why have you done this? It tested his faith greatly. But in the end, he recovered. And then he thought, no, actually, Krishna was there the whole time. So Krishna will not let us down. But even Krishna will test us. So in the end, we have to have one attachment, one thing that we do not let go of at the time of death. That is Krishna. Guru and Krishna, you do not let go of. The holy name, you do not let go of at the time of death. That's the test all of us will have to face. So that's what the Bhagavatam is preparing us for, to become detached, to develop knowledge, develop bhakti, so that we can depend on Krishna, because he is the only thing that we can depend on at the time of death. Guru and Krishna and Vaishnavas and Tulsi Devi and a little bit of prasadam. But everything else will leave you at the time of death. Even prasad leaves you at the time of death. At the end, you can't even eat. Just like in the final days, Bhakti Charuswami was making khichdi for Prabhupada without spice. Because the Kaviraj said he's sick, he can't eat anything else. So he was having khichdi juice without spice. So they used to get a spoon and put it into Prabhupada's mouth. Prabhupada, you see in the final days, he couldn't even sit up. So they put some in his mouth. Prabhupada said, what is this? And I said, Prabhupada, it's like khichdi juice without spice. And Prabhupada said, what's the use of eating? So you're going to feed me khichdi juice without spice. I said, what's the use of eating? There's no taste in that, no pleasure in that. In the end, you can't even eat. So everything gets taken away from you. The only thing you have is Krishna and Guru and Vaishnavas. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments, what we discussed. Any other questions? Yeah, so go deeper into your bhakti. Be more serious. Chant more seriously. Do the seva more seriously. And if you're sincere, Krishna will wreck your life for you. If you're really trying to get to him, but you can't give up your attachments, Krishna will wreck everything. And he'll force you to become detached. So you just keep chanting sincerely, being sincere, and then Krishna will take care of everything else. He'll wreck your whole life. Shri Krishna Chandra Bhagavan Ki. As a grihastha, Bhagavatam says take sannyas. Take sannyas, yes. After class, you should just go. And you should. No, it means that by bhakti, by devotional service, you will develop detachment. So you can be grihastha, that's no problem. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the grihastha acharya. He had 10 kids, 12 kids, very good wife. He was a powerful person in society. So he was like, you know, big person in society, you know, big family, everything. But he writes in his bhajans, he says, the children are my servants. Sorry, not my servants. He said, the children are the servants of Krishna. And I am the caretaker of the house. So I see the house as an ashram, which is Krishna's ashram. And I see the wife and the children as being servants of Krishna living in that ashram, in that temple. And my job is to serve them, to maintain them. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur saw his grihastha ashram as something favorable. It is pratikul, not anukul. Sorry, it is anukul, not pratikul. It is favorable. So grihastha life is not unfavorable if you are Krishna conscious. If you're not, then it becomes challenging. TK? Okay. Any other question? Sabari.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
So how do we understand the importance of the value of the Krishna ashram when it's like kind of conveyed as a
Yeah, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains it. It's like a safety net. It's like if you're in a circus and you're walking on a tightrope, right? You need a safety net, right? So Grihastha Ashram is the safety net. You're doing your bhakti, but sometimes your material desires, they overcome you. So it's like a way to give you safety. Let's say you have sex desire. Okay, so then have sex, right? And have kids. Right, that's Grihastha Ashram. That's Dharma. Krishna says in Gita, I am sex life, which is not contrary to religious principles. So that's fine. You can have all those things. So you're in the Grihastha Ashram. You're doing devotional service, but your material desires overwhelm you sometimes. So then do it properly. That's the system. Make sense? Okay. Any other question? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gauranga.